sewer system that's built and operated by this company here, Norðurorka, North Energy. I work for a, so to speak, Norðurorka. I work for Vistorka. Vist means eco. It's eco energy. So I'm owned by Norðurorka, so to speak, but it's a limited company. And Norðurorka, the utility company, is owned by the municipality, Akureyri. So the local authorities here, Akureyri, and the small villages around Akureyri, they own Norðurorka. So
community-owned energy.
And my main role is I'm a lobbyist, so to speak. We call this Vistorka like a green project office. So I try to get people living here and the politicians and the Norðurorka and everybody here to change. We're talking about energy transition, vehicles, and we have now here, for example, we are producing biomethane in Akureyri from the landfill. We are producing biodiesel from used cooking oil. So that's my role. I work, and we have, while you're here, we have a composting plant. So all organic waste is collected in Akureyri. Yeah. And you are in a green town. But we're going to talk about Iceland and renewable energy, hydropower, transmission lines. Feel free to ask and just talk while I go through this. I know it's been a long day, so just try to keep this light. Just to, you can see this very, okay?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we have, the population of Iceland is 370,000, give or take. Akureyri is 19,000. It's always quite easy to compare with the states, United States, because it's times 1,000. So it's we have 1,000 Teslas in Iceland. I think it's a million in the states. I don't know if that's
really.
It's about 5 of them today.
So this the green circle here. That's we have around 30,000 people within that circle. A circle of this size in the capital area. That's 80% of the population.
Wow.
We have 8% here. Akureyri is by far the largest town outside the capital area.
Really?
So there are very few living in the rest of Iceland. But we have all our electricity is from either hydropower or geothermal power. We have three main areas of geothermal power. That's here to the east of Akureyri, around Mývatn, Lake Mývatn. And one here, Hellisheiði, that's the Reykjavik area, and one here on the south. So that's because it goes through here. So all the geothermal power plants are on this line here. This is the largest hydropower dam in Iceland, Kárahnjúkar. It's the installed power is about 700 megawatts. And we're going to talk about that today. We have three aluminum smelters in Iceland, one here on the east coast and two around Reykjavik. You probably passed one of them on your way to Reykjavik from Keflavik Airport.
Mm-hmm.
This one is owned by Alcoa, Pittsburgh, I guess. The power production is owned by the Landsvirkjun. I'll come back to that. We have two windmills in Iceland, not very big. They are, so to speak, being tested. It's just two, and they of course have plans to build more here, but it hasn't been approved yet by the planning authorities and or by the government. There's an island here. I don't know if
we have to talk about it.
No, there's an island here to the north of Iceland called Grímsey. It's on the Arctic Circle, so if you have a chance to go there, you get a certificate that you've been to the Arctic Circle. And there's also one island here in Eyjafjörður, in the fjord. Probably saw it on your left hand when you were driving to Akureyri from Siglufjörður, called Hrísey. Both islands are today part of Akureyri municipality. We have around 70 people during summertime in Grímsey, probably somewhere around 30 during wintertime. All energy, Grímsey is not connected to the mainland with a cable or anything. So, and they don't have geothermal heating. So all energy in Grímsey today is produced with diesel generators. So we call it the last black spot in Iceland. So we are planning now, Vistorka, the energy company here, because it's they pay the same as we do for kilowatt hour for electricity. That means the government is paying the rest, because diesel energy, diesel electricity is far more expensive than the hydro. So we want to install two small windmills there this summer. They have arrived, so we are planning to install them in August. They're the smallest kind you can find. They're only, the pole is just 9 meters high, so they're very small. And,
9 meters, wow.
Yeah, and it's just as a testing. We're just testing on there how they will survive the winter and all that, the conditions in Grímsey. So we'll see about that. We're also installing some solar panels there. They're both, the windmills are 12 kilowatts and the solar panels are 12 kilowatts. So it will be very, very interesting. They will be competing.
To see.
Because today our solar panels, they don't need sunshine. They just need daylight. So you have
lots
in 3 or 4 months, and not so much in December and January. So that's Iceland, the big picture, so to speak. Okay, we have, in Iceland, we have Landsnet. That's the grid company. So they run, they own and run and operate the main grid in Iceland. Of course, the grid here in Akureyri is owned and operated by the utility company here. But this is the main grid, and this is the installed power on the grid, over 2,000 megawatts. They have offices here as well, five people, I think, and but the main offices are in Reykjavik. As you know, electricity has to move in circles, so to speak. So if you open up the socket here and start following one of the lines, you will end up here again. So it all has to be connected. So if you're installing energy or energy production, they have to know about it, because they have to monitor, make sure that somebody can use it. If you install a windmill, it doesn't produce electricity all the time, so they have to kind of regulate the system and make sure that there is some place they can put the electricity. Of course, we're talking about large-scale production. So, they operate the grid. Then we have, this is the main grid. So you have the large power lines, the green, they're running directly from the hydropower dams or plants to the smelters. That's here, here, and here. And you can see them clearly. They're quite big structures. And then you have the red, the circle. You probably saw it when you were driving over there. They come here from the west. And that's, we are here at Rangárvellir, and that's here. So that's the line coming here. It's they're kind of building it up now, because it's been the demand is increasing in this area, and they're getting quite old, 40, 50 years old, some of them. So a lot of it is being rebuilt again. And this is Landsvirkjun, founded in 65 by the state of Iceland and the city of Reykjavik. And this is the national power company of Iceland. So they like it says here, they own and operate over 18 power plants in Iceland. Even though they're founded in 65, they only have a handful of customers. The aluminum smelters, some data centers, and that's it. So they have large customers. This is the main area for hydro in Iceland, Þjórsá, and this is Kárahnjúkar that we're going to talk about today. You can see this is the installed power in Iceland, and this is the big jump when this one was installed, Kárahnjúkar. So it's been growing, and this is the reason we are, before 1970, we were one of the poorest countries in Europe. Today, we're one of the richest, and that's why. Do we need all this electricity? No. But the energy is available. It's like the fish. We don't need it all. We catch way more fish than we can eat. But it's within our jurisdiction, and this is our, these are our resources. This is how we maintain the lifestyle that we have here today. Fish, electricity, aluminum, and of course today tourists over the last few years. So we have many, you're probably starting to feel that Icelanders are quite proud. We are a small nation, but we like to be considered a real nation, nonetheless. And so we try to make us bigger by talking about per capita. So we have many world records per capita. Marine fish catch, Iceland, and then Norway, of course, per capita, number one in the world. Of course, because we are few and we have a lot of fish. Same with the electricity. This is electricity consumption per capita. So, again, way more electricity than we need. But this is the use. 80% of the electricity is to heavy industry. All other businesses and the people living here use the rest. So through the heavy industry, we are exporting our electricity. So we consider our electricity to be on the global market. We import what do you call it, bauxite for the aluminum industry from Australia. And it's a fairly simple process. You have the aluminum oxide, and you have the electricity, and you try to lure the oxide from the aluminum, and that's all it is. That's the basic process, and you do that with a lot of carbon. You have coal, sort of big blocks of coal, so you have CO2. That's how you get the CO2, and you have the aluminum in bars. So that's how we export the electricity, so to speak. I hope I managed to explain that. this is Kárahnjúkar, the largest hydro dam in Europe. And this is the reservoir. This is the power station. Most of it is inside the mountain, and these are the turbines. I think there are 7 or 8 around 100 megawatt turbines. As you can see, the power lines here, and they go over the mountain. They're quite you can see them very clearly because of there's nothing else there. You have the nature and then the power lines. So they all of this, both the building of the hydropower dam and the smelter, it was all very, so to speak, controversial in Iceland. Heavily debated. Yeah, the debate. I'm just going to mention like 4 points. Destroying the tourist industry, that was one of the points. Not environmentally friendly hydropower and drowning land with reservoir and methane pollution. Why methane pollution? That is, if you have a lot of vegetation and you drown that, that vegetation starts to break down and doesn't have access to oxygen, so it does create methane. Supporting polluting heavy industry, destroying untouched wilderness. So you can see these are some pictures from that time, photos. That's. I think it's quite understandable. Of course, it's. I'm of course allowed. The debate was a lot. It was the people in Reykjavik that were against anything happening in the nature on Eastfjords. So the people living there, jobs, more stability, and all that. Boosting the economy for the Eastfjords. They were criticizing that the people in Reykjavik were getting involved at all. But of course, I should be allowed, and I think everybody's allowed to have their opinion on things like that. I should be allowed to stay here and fight for gorillas. Whatever, it's. I don't have to have been with gorillas to want to protect them, yeah. This is one of the, this film gives a good idea about what we are talking about. Has anybody seen it? Yeah? Okay, yeah. It's a great film.
Mm-hmm. It is, really good.
Great storyline, the plot and everything, and...
Special effects.
Yeah, this is. I would highly recommend it. It's really
good. I'd like to see it again.
Mm. So the first point: destroying the tourist industry. This is how the tourist industry has been developing over the past few years. This is Kárahnjúkar. So in numbers, it hasn't affected the tourist industry. You have here the total number of tourists to Iceland from 1949 to 2007. That's a total number, cumulative.
And this is from 2008 to 2016. This is 8 years, and this is, what, 58 years. So at least all our, what we've been doing with our power plants and the smelters, the heavy industry, it has even given more access to the nature, because they built roads, they to get to the windmills or the dams or the geothermal sites. So the area is actually more accessible now than it was before. Even new attractions.
Where's that?
This is next to the Kauranhukar dam on the east coast. So they moved one of the glacier rivers to get the water into the reservoir. So this is what you have now. This is very accessible. You can actually walk down here and see all this. And they even now have salmon in the river. They didn't
have
before.
Used to be the river, though, right there?
This used to be full, more or less, most part of the year. But
they diverted the water to the reservoir.
Yes, most of it.
Right.
So... This is not Iceland, this is Brazil. So here you have large reservoir, small drop water. So you need, we can consider the reservoirs as batteries. So you're just storing energy. And to get the power from it, you need to use the drop. So compared to Kauranhukar, you have high waterfall. The intake is 625 meters above sea level, but the powerhouse is 30 meters, so it's almost 600 meters drop. So a bit dramatic, but so large reservoir, small drop, small reservoir, large drop. Same effect.
Energy.
So we're taking small parts of the nature for the reservoir to get a lot of energy. So this is, it's called Fljótsdalur Power Station, Kauranhukar Dam. So this is the place, and this is the glacier Vatnajökull, and this is the water coming from Vatnajökull. And you can find on YouTube, if you want to study the construction even more, you can find something on YouTube. This is just an example of how you calculate power capacity. You know, all you need to know is the waterfall and the water flow, so to speak. It's a fairly simple calculation, and that gives you the power capacity. And like it says here, the real output can be about 70% of the calculated due to losses in the system. This is the reservoir. It's called Hálslón. Neck, Háls. Reservoir, Lón. This is over 1 year, and this is how it develops over the year. This is how it's filling up and emptied over the year. Because the smelters, they need constant power. Same, all year, all day, constant power. So they fill up the reservoir. This, the line here, it's the current year. This is, so we're here in July, so it's starting to fill up. So by the end of July, it will be full. And then they start to take from it again in December. That's where it starts to go down again. So it freezes, thaws. Again, this is just to show the difference between this could be what's going underwater in other places. As you might have seen, and we don't have a lot of that. And
say that's not here, is it?
No, this is not Iceland. So yeah,
Amazon.
But this is where we have the water now in Kauranhukar. this was the site there. Just not a lot of vegetation. It's mostly rock that went underwater. So supporting polluting heavy industry, of course, but this how the debate is, or was, and still is that we are making the greenest aluminum possible. So if somebody wants to close down a smelter like this, these two should be the last to close down in the world, because we're not producing the electricity. They're very dependent on the electricity. We're not producing it with gas, coal, or oil, or anything.
But you're shipping all the raw materials from Australia.
Yes, and kind of the life cycle, in the life cycle of aluminum, the transport is very small fraction of it. It's only a few percentages of the emission, of the total emission from making the metal. So, yeah, that's not the worst part of it.
So you just made that comparison. I just want to make sure I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
That footprint is very small in the life cycle, the transport.
Yeah.
But if you're already so clean that you're not producing, you know, the electricity that you produce is so clean,
yeah,
now that footprint becomes bigger.
Because of the transportation.
Well, the transportation becomes a bigger piece because you're...
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
So how can you compare that? I mean, just... I'm not trying to make an argument, I just want to understand.
Yeah. Most of the emission in producing aluminum is in the smelter itself, because it's for every kilogram of aluminum you get 2 kilograms of CO2 emission. So that's the heavy, that's a big footprint.
It's not the energy producing piece of it.
Not the energy producing piece of it. So that's the coal blocks you're using in the smelter itself. The big picture, climate problems are energy problems. 70% of global emission is from energy use. Now we're talking about the world. 80% of primary energy use in the world is from fossil fuels. The world's production and consumption are totally integral. So this is, we are just part of the total or global market, so to speak. So we're participating in that. So there is this energy demand, and it's growing. Population, economic growth. We have the numbers of cars in Asia, China especially, are growing every year. So there's demand for new material, new metals. So we will manage to keep that down with better efficiency, for example, with the LED light bulbs. We are now, I think we've actually completed it here in town. So all the light poles in the streets and have now LED. And according to the municipality, the electricity use now for the street lighting here in Akureyri is 30% of what it was, due to the switch to LED. So that's how we will keep some of this demand down. But the world desperately needs more renewable energy, fast, because, as you know, only a few countries in the world have oil, but all countries in the world have renewable energy, wind, solar, hydro, geothermal, biomass, whatever. So everybody can produce renewable energy. Iceland is contributing 50 terawatt hours of green electricity to that need. So into the big picture. The fourth point, destroying untouched wilderness with dams and power lines. You don't see this in Iceland?
No, you don't. That's but beautiful.
That's many places in the world you see this.
Much worse.
I don't know where this picture is from. You might know it.
It's like San Fran.
Yeah.
There are two reasons, main reasons why we don't have this in Iceland. One is we don't like them. I think people just want to have this underground.
Mm-hmm.
The second one is that the towns have been building up after electricity arrived. So we didn't, it wasn't a problem putting them underground. We didn't have to go into old parts of town and tear everything up and put the, it just, they just built up together. So
there's no way you can put those things underground?
There are ways, but it's especially this is difficult, the biggest ones, because just of technology. They're, according to Landsnet, the national grid company, it's technically not possible at the moment. But the next level, it's they're starting to do much more of that now. So the red line, the main circle, a lot of that is going underground now.
I can ask you, because they're putting some of these power lines now in the south of Iceland. Do you know what kind of power lines they're putting in there?
It depends on how far they have to reach. You know, they can only be underground for a few meters, so to speak.
Okay.
But if you have to go beyond that, you need large structures. What do you call them? Substations.
I read a long time ago that Japan was putting them underground, their transmission lines, but they were doing direct current.
Okay.
And then changing it to AC when they got to the substation.
Okay, yeah.
But there's a loss there, so I don't know how.
No, I'm not an expert in this,
right.
But according to the power company and the grid company, this is the reason why. But whether they are making the excuse because it's expensive, I don't know. But at least the government owns all these companies, the grid company and the power company. So they are putting pressure on, for example, the main lines for the towns that we're distributing are being put underground. Not just because we don't like them, also because of weather.
Yeah.
So we had some problems a year and a half ago here in Iceland. A lot of, for example, you drove through Dalvik on your way from Siglufjörður.
Yeah.
They had, when that was in, a year and a half ago, they were out for days because of weather, because their power lines were overground, and they're now being put underground.
Mm.
So that's the next number down in size, so to speak.
Distribution.
Yeah.
In our area, it'd be fire is the big danger.
Ah.
Yeah.
I have a question. Are you using the melting of the glaciers in terms of producing electricity and energy?
Yeah. That's how we the power dams or the hydro dams they collect the glacier water. Most of them are collecting glacier water.
So as someone just mentioned that our areas are, we're in California, not a lot of us are,
mm-hmm.
we're combating the drought.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of our towns are coming together and forming co-ops for affordable
mm-hmm.
energy and solar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There are two things, so to speak, being moved in this photo: people and electricity.
Mm-hmm.
So usually we don't have a lot of debate about this.
Yeah.
So even, you know, we want to move people around very fast and securely, but we would like to have it like this.
Yeah.
So.
It looks so much nicer.
Yeah. But yeah, that's how it is. You know, some
give and take.
Give and take. Yeah. Yeah. This is just an idea about how this was. This is where the water is now, and you can see that's before and after, so to speak. This is where they built the dam, one here, and filled it up here. And you can see that here. So this is about the size. This is the glacier, Vatnajökull, and this is the water coming from the glacier and being collected.
So you feed the power plant through a tunnel?
Yeah, so there's this tunnel, yeah, and the intake is, I think it's somewhere here, and then there's this tunnel going through the power station. And then there's the drop.
The drop.
Yeah?
Nimba.
I mean, we are highly dependent on oil in Iceland. We don't have any, but we use a lot. So somebody had to build this so we could have oil. So you could say it's fair that because we can easily build this, we have a lot of wind in Iceland, mm-hmm. that we should build this so somebody can have aluminum, for example. I don't know. But, yeah, that's how it is.
Well, the ones on the right look a lot better than the ones on the left.
Exactly.
Plus
yeah,
not.
So... And these are the two that we have on the south coast, the only two windmills in Iceland at the moment. Yeah, that was my talk, so to speak. That's what I wanted to say today.
Mm-hmm. Have you collected any data on those two yet?
They do, yeah. This is the Landsvirkjun, the national power company. They own and operate them. Mm-hmm. So I think they're actually, you can see them online, what they're producing at just live, what they're producing. Yeah.
Does this convince the people on the other side at all?
No. So it's like you either like it or not. And I think if you, I think this is a fair point because they're not just against people that don't want windmills or hydropower dams or smelters. I think they understand that today we are consuming, we have the phones, we have the iPads and everything. The cars, the airplanes, they have aluminum. So if we want to have that lifestyle, we need aluminum. But I think the people against this, they want to reduce the total consumption in the world, I think.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And that's a fair point.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Hard to go backwards.
Hard to go backwards, yeah. Yeah.
Are you having noticeable effects of global warming other than the glaciers?
Yes.
Sea level rise and issues with storms and all that?
Storms, yes. More extreme weathers, like, you know. But also in the, I don't know, at least 3 or 4 serious incidents with, what do you call that?
Landslides.
Yeah. So we've seen that now. Way more than we've done before. So.
Maybe because you're thinking of the windmills. Why do we need more energy?
Mm-hmm. Like I say, we don't need it. But should we harness it because of the issue? The wind? The geothermal?
To make money for the country?
Or just to make products for the world.
Mm. Or to not use the oil that you're importing.
Exactly.
Not importing.
Right. Yeah.
Have everybody on the
line. And give other people a chance not to use oil?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
So...
how are you
going
to distribute it to the other people?
There has been talk about a cable from Iceland to Scotland. That's one solution. You could have us connected to the main grid of Europe. Mm-hmm. That would give us... It's been calculated. It's not feasible at the moment. So it's a heavy project, very complicated and all that, and it's not feasible at the moment. But it also gives us security. because something could happen here with weather. Some of the power plants could break down, and so we could have electricity coming from Europe to us.
He's not selling me, I'm just one of them. we'll do another talk, you know, but that's okay. He's not selling me this. Because when we get, and I'm asking you, if we get connected to the main grid of Europe, what would the prices be like in Iceland?
Well, if you own the electricity.
Yes.
There's EU rules.
Well, then they don't get your electricity.
No, that's actually a good question, because it's the strange thing is, because we own, like you say, we own all the companies.
Yeah.
So if the price goes up, we get more, but we pay more.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a
closed system.
So it's like,
yeah, so it's just
from affect the general public, just so that we have it.
It will affect the general public, but like I say, our companies will have more revenue.
So that's the golden rule. People with the gold make the rules.
Yeah.
You can make your new rules.
But,
are there other ways to export the energy besides, I'm sure you've looked at the feasibility, you know, cables across huge, they would have to be huge to carry that much power for that distance, but...
Yeah.
Are there other ways of exporting the energy?
Not that I know.
No, batteries, technology is not good.
Sorry. Of course there is. We've talked about hydrogen. So we would produce hydrogen in Iceland and export that as fuel.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, Landsvirkjun is looking into that now. So... in that way, if we produce more electricity, we could export fuel for others to use instead of oil.
How do you transport hydrogen?
Tankers.
Carefully.
Yeah.
I guess like petrol, you know, just in it's a fluid.
Tankers.
Like a
Put it in those little bottles.
Tankers.
I think this is kind of piggybacking on what Carol was saying in regard to the hydropower from the melting of the glaciers, so that might be a finite amount.
Mm-hmm.
And so if your eggs are in that basket, as it were, what would come next?
Good point.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's
that's
probably solar, wind.
But there are alternatives.
Yeah. Like with Norway,
mm-hmm.
they're similar to Iceland in that way that they became very rich very fast because they found oil.
Mm-hmm.
But their oil production is now going down. So their oil wells are empty. So, but they have, of course, been clever enough to keep their money. They've not spent it all. So they are the richest nation in the world. They are really investing now in renewable energy. So they are using their oil money to invest in renewable energy.
Yeah.
So has the state, did they do calculations on how long they expect the glacier to last at current rates?
You can
come out of that.
Yeah, but I'm not familiar with it, but I know of it. It has been calculated, and it's been, you know, whether it's a well-known science, I don't know, but I've read something about that. They are forecasting when
I would expect before a project like this was undertaken that would have looked at that.
Yeah.
How long can we expect that power, that source?
Yeah.
That water source to last.
Exactly, and you know, talking about calculations, there's one interesting story in this reservoir at Kárahnjúkar. They had to, because it's so heavy, you're just adding new weight to that area,
mm-hmm.
They had to check if that reservoir would affect and spark any earthquakes.
Mm-hmm.
just to put all this weight in that area. Mm-hmm. So if it would move the earth. So, and we have people to calculate that. Strangely enough. But.
So,
yeah.
Solar energy is not really a commodity for Iceland because you're in the dark half the year.
Yeah, and yeah.
Batteries won't last.
That's. I think it will play with batteries.
Yeah.
So, like we see here, you know, we will. Actually, the cheapest energy today globally is wind energy. So, mm-hmm. yeah. So, wind. The cost per kilowatt hour of wind energy is the lowest energy available in history. Solar is in the same direction. It's the cost is going down very fast. So, if that happens and the battery technology will develop fast, I think that will play together. We will have some wind, we will have some solar and some batteries. Then you have your electric car with a battery, and all this will kind of play together. I think that's the big scheme that Elon Musk is. That's his plan.
Do the waters off of Iceland get too deep, too fast to put the windmills out in the water? On platforms or something?
I've not.
Because I know they're putting them in Scotland.
Yeah.
Offshore.
And around Britain.
In Britain, a lot of Britain. Yeah. Right.
So I think because, if I just quickly go back. So one of the main areas that have been looked into is here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, nobody lives here. It's rather flat. It's So I think just moving it out to the ocean. I don't know the cost effect, but I think that's why they're looking at it. I've never heard of any projects.
There's not much population there.
Yeah. So they would always look first of putting it in somewhere here. And like here, where you have already construction, you have roads, you have everything, you have power lines and everything. So I would think they would always look first at places like this before they look at the coastline. Right. Coastline.
So
what's next?
Any last questions?
happy hour?